Okay. Question. Yeah.
So I'm supposing that the middle level practitioner path is like the Theravadin. With the initial level practitioners, who would that refer to? Who's like happy with Seattle?
Okay. Okay. So the middle level practitioner is in common with like Theravada Buddhism. So who are the initial level practitioners? Those could be people who are Buddhists, but who never really think about nirvana, or who never really think about enlightenment. They're just thinking, I want a good rebirth. Okay? So, you know, there's some people, really, that's what they're concerned with. You could, in a general way, you know, in a very general way, say that this is also the concern of all of other religions as well. You know? Because if you look at, you know, Christianity, you know, any kind of theistic religion, you're trying to, you know, get to heaven. Yeah? So they don't have the same framework as we do with different lives and whatever. But, you know, you're still aiming for something good to happen to you after you die. So that's kind of similar in that way.
It seems to me that monastic life would be really beneficial for cultivating equanimity as well. But that's not a purpose, so that in the Mahayana, it's not considered that, or is it always within that middle level?
Okay, so you're saying that you think that monastic precepts would be very helpful for cultivating equanimity, and so are monastic precepts always within the middle level. You have to remember that when you practice the path in common with the first level practitioner, when you go on to practice the path in common with the middle level, you don't stop practicing the path in common with the initial. Okay? When you go on to the advanced, you don't stop practicing the two previous ones. So, you know, that monastic life is very helpful for cultivating bodhicitta, you know? I mean, it comes in the middle level because it's something that really helps you, you know? Because the essence of monastic life is developing is non-harmfulness. That's the basic thing of monastic life, is not harming others with your body and speech. Okay? And by extension, beginning to look at the mind that harms others. That attitude of not wanting to harm others is so important to cultivate bodhicitta, because bodhicitta is founded on compassion. If you want to harm others, you can't have the wish to harm others, and compassion cannot exist in the mind simultaneously. Okay? So the monastic precepts, by helping you really relinquish any kind of harmfulness, you know, set a very good foundation for developing bodhicitta. Yeah. In explaining all of these, yeah, it doesn't mean that we, you know, some people, what they do is they only meditate on precious human life, and when they've mastered that, then they meditate on impermanence and death, and when they've mastered that, then they do the three lower realms. Some people, it's like that, but more commonly what happens is you learn all of these different things. So, you know, I think it's very helpful because then you understand how they fit together, but you put more emphasis on the beginning of the path when you're a beginner. As you begin to master those things, then you begin to put more emphasis on progressively higher levels of the path. But you still keep the previous ones because they're the foundation for you getting to where you're going. Does that answer your question okay?
Mm-hmm. What is
the Lojong or Eight First Thought Transformation fit in?
Okay, where does the Lojong or Eight First Thought Transformation fit in? Well, Lojong is a very vast body of literature, yeah? And when you look at like the seven-point Lojong text, the mind training in 7 points, it always starts out with precious human life, death and impermanence, things like that. So in that way, the Lojong or thought transformation, it actually encompasses most of the topics of the Lamrim, yeah, but it puts more emphasis on the bodhicitta, okay, on the development of bodhicitta, and then how to transform adversity into the path by using adversity as a motivation for developing bodhicitta, and for using adversity as a way to develop ethical conduct and patience and joyous effort and all these different things. Okay, so the main thing about the Lojong or thought transformation thing is when you come to the path of the advanced level practitioner. But if you look at the text, it usually, you know, many of them include also the initial level. Like yesterday after lunch, we chanted the 37 practices of bodhisattvas. So that is a thought training or Lojong text. But if you look, the first verses are talking about, you know, how does it start out? You know, having found this rare ship of freedom and fortune. You know, here think and meditate unwaveringly day and night. Okay, that's the very first thing, precious human life. Okay?
So Lojong is just a different presentation of a very similar topic.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, where is the Lamrim derived from? I know you said the teacher is man, but I mean, what did he just teach it? Did he write it?
Oh, okay. So what happened? Where is the Lamrim derived from? Let's go back to the time of the Buddha, okay? When the Buddha was alive, he taught for 45 years, and he just went from place to place in ancient India giving teachings. And according to who his audience was, he taught different things, you know. So he taught very much according to the disposition and needs of his audience. And so he gave this whole wide variety of teachings, yeah, which was eventually, you know, made into the canon. Yeah, we have the Pali canon, we have two Sanskrit canons, okay. Now, the Buddha gave all these different teachings. If we're coming into it, we go, what do I practice first? And what do I practice second? You know, I mean, these are all the teachings of the Buddha here. Okay? So if you're going to read all of those, you know, is it going to be clear to our mind what to practice? It's like there's so much. What do we do first? What do we do second? So Lama Atisha. Okay, A-T-I-S-H-A. He lived in the 11th century, and he was Indian, and he brought Buddhism to Tibet. So he wrote this text called Lamp of the Path, and in it he spoke about the three levels of practitioner that we have here, the initial, the middle, and the advanced. Okay? And so from there began, you know, the Tibetans began to systematize the teachings. And, okay, well, what teachings go, you know, what teachings belong to the initial level? What belong to the middle level? What belong to the advanced level? So Lama Atisha's text was very short. It was just a few pages long. He didn't elaborate on all of this. So then what happened is you got a number of people afterwards, probably began with the Kadam tradition, and then, you know, it went into different, you know, you have the different Tibetan traditions. All of them, the Nyingma, Kargya, Gelu, and Sakya, they all have some text that resemble the Lamrim. The name Lamrim is used predominantly in the Gelu tradition, yeah? But the material itself is found in all four of the Tibetan traditions. So la means path, and rim means either gradual or stages. Okay? So then there was one great Tibetan sage who lived in the late 14th, early 15th century. That was Lama Tsongkhapa. That's Lama Tsongkhapa there. And he's also in the center of the painting there. So he was the one who did a lot of systematization of this material and wrote this very thick book called The Great Treatise on the Stages of the Path. And then after him, then there were other Lamrim books, you know. So that became very popular as a way of systematizing the teachings in Tibet. Okay, so let's just sit quietly. I know it's a lot of material, but as much as you can absorb this, you know, and even going at it again, it will really help you in your Dharma studies, because then whenever you hear any kind of thing, you'll know exactly where it belongs, and it cuts down on confusion. Okay? And so similarly, as we're talking about the monastic precepts, you'll see, you know, oh, they come under the three higher trainings. Why do I take the monastic precepts? Oh, it's because I've seen the disadvantages of cyclic existence. And I've seen, you know, the causes of cyclic existence, the ignorance, anger, attachment, and karma. And I want to get out of cyclic existence. Okay? But I don't want to just do that. I also have in the back of my mind wanting to practice the Bodhisattva path. But, you know, that's kind of my motivation for taking monastic vows. And so then when you see that, then you see, okay, if I'm really going to take monastic vows, then the more I can cultivate the determination to be free, then the clearer and easier, the clearer my ordination is going to be and the easier it's going to be to keep the precepts. Because if I don't have that motivation to be free of cyclic existence, instead if my motivation is because, you know, I want to wear the robes because then people will stop me and ask me what I do and I'll kind of be unusual and important. Or if your motivation is because then I get to sit in the front of the meditation hall and when food is served I'm in the front of the line, you know, then you begin to see if you have those motivations, that's not the right motivation for taking monastic vows. Okay? So the motivation is the chief thing that we want to cultivate, you know, in adopting a monastic lifestyle. So then knowing this, we understand, okay, well, I want to develop this, you know, this aspiration for liberation. Well, in order to do that, I first have to develop an aspiration for a good rebirth. So I have to start at the beginning of the path in precious human life and impermanence and death and the lower realms and refuge and karma. Then into the Four Noble Truths, and I put some bodhicitta in there so that I'm not just limited, you know, looking for my own nirvana, but I want to remember that I'm eventually going towards full enlightenment for everybody's benefit. Okay? So knowing this kind of thing helps you, you know, direct your mind so that you can continuously and in a very clear, systematic way cultivate a strong, stable motivation for becoming a monastic. You know? And if you have a strong, stable motivation, then your ordained life is so happy. You know? And your ordained life is just, it's really nice. When you don't have a strong, stable motivation, yeah, when your mind's still involved with the eight worldly concerns, then your ordained life becomes really problematic. You know, because I want to go to the movies, but I have this precept that says no entertainment, and I don't like that precept because I want to go to the movies. Okay? And so, why do you want to go to the movies? Because the mind is still quite attached to, you know, just kind of pleasure of this life. So the more we can develop the correct motivation, you know, and we may not have that. We don't need to have full, complete, 100% realization of the correct motivation before we ordain. But we have to have some training in it. Okay? Because if we don't have any training in it, then we're going to be really totally miserable as monastics. If we have some training in it, and we know the meditations to do to increase that good motivation, then if we take the precepts in that kind of mental state, we can start practicing the precepts. We see the benefit. If once in a while our mind, you know, there's a lot of attachment or chaos in our mind, we know what meditations we need to do to calm our mind down and to remember the right precept, the right motivation. So then we have the tools to work with our mind. So, you know, because once you ordain, it isn't like you live happily ever after. I mean, it's not like all of our ignorance, anger, and attachment, you know, stays at the bottom of the driveway and it doesn't come up into the house. You know, it's like it follows us everywhere. So we need to have the tools to be able to deal with our own mind. And the tools that help us deal with our mind are these very long meditations, okay, that help us cultivate the proper motivation. Okay? But like I said, you don't have to have everything totally mastered before you take the precepts because, you know, but we have to have some, you know, some familiarity, some groundedness in this, you know. And then, you know, we can take the precepts, we know why we're taking them, we know where we're going with them, and then again, life becomes very nice. Okay, let's sit quietly.